You are listening to RNIB Connect Radio. Neil Rowe was a pastry chef at a hotel on Burra Island, just off the Devonshire coast. That was until 6 months ago when he suddenly lost his sight. Neil joins me on the line now to tell us his story and maybe even enlighten us with some quick tips on preparing the perfect pastry. Neil, how are you doing today?
Good morning, good day to everybody listening. Thanks for having me.
It's a real pleasure to have you on the show, Neil. Now, as I mentioned, you were a pastry chef on Burra Island. Tell us a little bit about your life on Burra Island while you were working there.
It was absolutely phenomenal. It was an experience I'm so glad I've been through. And, you know, it's, every day was just like living in paradise. It hit me a lot of times when we're obviously working in a high standard kitchen. It is really good. But if I just had a day off, what we do, I mean, all the staff were very comfortable and very, very happy. We all got on terrifically, you know. But if I just one day off, we'd all just go in the sea. We'd go surfing, or we'd go stand up paddle boarding, or we'd go swimming, or, you know, etc. But I was just doing some stand up paddle boarding, and I just went around the island and I could see all the magical coves and the coastline going round. And it does give you like a bit of a gratitude attack, you know, and it gives really serene feeling, you know. It's just, it really, really amazing place.
It sounds like an absolutely magical place to visit, let alone to work, Neil. But let's go back a little further and tell me a little bit about where you first realised you had a real passion for pastry.
I started off, basically, I sort of almost fell into a kitchen when I was very young. Quite a natural in most aspects of the kitchen. I could do the sweets, I could do everything. I could do something for the first time and it would work. You know, it would come out and it, you know, it would, the end result would be really, really good. So I ended up passing myself off to catering college and did a 5-year course in about just over 2 years. So that was really good because I really wanted it. I was hungry for it. And then I went out to the workplace. I had my first head chef job when I was 25. But I sort of always ended up being in the sweets section, in the pastry. So I ended up going back to the Royal Catering College, which is in London, and did a year's course there, which is an advanced pastry diploma.
It sounds like you were a little bit of a prodigy there, Neil. You describe it as sort of falling into the kitchen and everything you put your hands on seemed to work out for you. Were your friends and family at this time quite surprised by how you took to it all?
No, they've always been very supportive, you know. They'd always come in wherever I was working somewhere locally or had a placement from agency local. They would always come and, you know, eat in wherever I was. They'd always ask me for recipes, or they'd always ask me for advice on kitchen, what would go with well with certain items of a menu, what would certainly go well with this. But yeah, I'd never once not looked forward to going to work, you know, whether I was just working on my own, producing a dinner party, or whether I was orchestrating and conducting a service of 20, 30 chefs, you know. But yeah, it's enjoying the cooking, the preparation, the mise en place, you know, the preparation, and then it's the service in the evening, maybe, you know, when it, you know, you start having a bit of a buzz on, really. So yeah, I really, really enjoy it, yeah.
It's great to hear the passion that you have for this, Neil. There's so many people who find their job cumbersome and it's something that they have to drag themselves to. It seems like that certainly was never the case for you. Once you fell into cooking or baking or working with pastry, you really took to it and it seems like it has shaped your life.
Yes, absolutely. I'd say it's very advantageous if you really enjoy your job. I mean, unless you're really David Beckham, you're not going to like be 100% enjoying it. But you can do the best you can. If you're unhappy, then I suggest, you know, or discontented, restless, then you know, try something else and keep trying it until you find something that fits and works. Because you have to be happy, that's important, you know. And if you're happy, you're going to produce, you're going to look forward to going to work, you're going to produce some good work. I'm very, very fortunate that sort of being in the right place at the right time. Worked with a lot of celebrity chefs, some of whom are still my friends now. I worked in the Michelin stars and rosette places, but anywhere really that has a food outlet, you know, and I'll be in there just cooking away, whether it's a hot dog van or or Michelin star, you know. I've cooked for Prince Charles and Camilla, which is probably one of the highlights of my career. But yeah, it was really, really enjoyed it. I mean, a couple of years before I ended up in a Burra Island, I looked, trying to look for a different aspect of the catering, you know, I've always been sort of headship. I've always been, if I can, I always try and look after the younger and see the people that are learning, doing the MVQs and that, and always try and teach them as much as I can, easier ways and better ways, and pass my knowledge and education experience on to them, which I enjoyed. But a friend of mine is Jamie Oliver, and he has a restaurant in Newquay. He has lots of restaurants, but one in Newquay he has, one of his first ones, and that's called 15. And it's one of his best ones because a lot of the chefs he employs down there, the apprentices, are people with sort of damaged backgrounds, people that have not been given a chance in society, you know, people that have been brought up in foster care, or maybe that maybe been criminal backgrounds, or maybe addictive person, you know, addiction. But they really want to break the cycle and they really want to try, but nobody sort of in society wants to give them a chance. But Jamie Oliver does hire them, it gives them a chance. And I ended up going down there and sort of helping teach them. But there, that was one of the best because they really had a lot of passion and they really wanted to, you know, to progress. So teach somebody that wants to be taught is, you know, it's good. So yeah, I enjoyed that too.
It certainly sounds like you were taking the skills that you had and then passing them on to people who could really use them, not just for the ability to work in the catering industry, but also to help them out in their lives. Now, what changed for you, Neil? About 6 months ago, you had a life-changing event.
Yes, it's about, well, it's hard to describe and talk about still, but it's a lot easier. It's really good. Like, but it's just when I was on Burr Island, I noticed I was just going about my daily business, prepping in the kitchen in the daytime, getting ready for service, you know, doing the produce ordering. I started noticing very quickly in a few days I couldn't read or see the tickets. You know, that I couldn't see. I had to leave them closer and closer and closer. And during the first week, to check on, and I couldn't read it. And by the end of that first week, since I noticed it, I was starting to use a magnifying glass. And people were commenting, you know, on it, obviously making sure I was okay, they were helping me, you know. But I was just sort of noticing it by myself. I'm thinking, well, maybe I'm a bit tired, or, you know, trying to justify it, giving it an excuse, you know, not to accept it and give acknowledgement of my eyesight sort of failing, you know. But after the second week, it was deteriorating on a daily basis, you know, really, really, really hard. You know, it was very forceful. It wasn't giving up. It was, so by the end of the second week, I walked in, I was really struck, because I was just feeling my way from my accommodation downstairs up to the kitchen. I was literally feeling my way. And I walked into the kitchen and everything was a blur. You know, everything was, it was like walking into a room filled full of smoke. I couldn't see really anything. I couldn't see who was in the kitchen with me. People were talking. I could recognise that they were standing right in front of me and I couldn't see them. And I just realised that there's pots on a stove that got full of water, full of hot, you know, produce, and there's sharp knives everywhere. But, you know, so I just called the manager. I said, look, he was aware of it. He's like, okay, I need some help now. I said, yeah, absolutely. What do you want us to do? So it was hard. You know, I didn't realise at the time what was happening. I thought maybe I could go to the hospital or the eye clinic, eye infirmary. They could put some magic eye drops in, and at the end of the day, I could see again, you know? It wasn't really sinking in. I didn't want to accept, didn't want to think of the worst. You know, I had a fear of failure. There's a massive fear that, you know, it was in the back of my mind, but I was trying to keep it and bury it there. But, you know, I was just positive, you know, I got a lift to the nearest hospital, which was in Devon, which is Plymouth, you know. The consultant down there from the Royal Eye Infirmary gave me a once-over, but he was a bit baffled at first, but he wouldn't let me go because he could see that there was something really drastically wrong. You know, to have, you know, good vision within 2 weeks, have no vision. I couldn't see it. It was very dangerous, you know. So he wanted to do lots of tests, but he wouldn't let me out of the hospital. He said, it's too dangerous. If I let you out, you may be back in half an hour when you run over or fell over. So I'd like to keep you in so I can do some tests so we can sort this out. So, okay, it's the best place for me, you know. They did every test in the book, really, I think, you know, prodded and poked, and which I didn't mind because I wanted a solution. I wanted a cure. I wanted just to get back into the kitchen, you know, back onto the Burr Island, go back, you know, by the board. And then I spent 10 weeks in total in a hospital. Work friends come and see me. My family and my friends were very supportive and come and see me. I have a lot of gratitude for each and every person that's helped me thus far on my journey. But my employment sort of had to cease and my accommodation was with my employment. So it is not just learning to live again, but it's literally starting a new life for
Absolutely.
me, you know? Yeah.
I mean, it's unfortunately all too common a story where the early signs of sight loss are detected, but it's almost a sheet of denial that you put over to try to avoid at the very last moment of accepting that your sight might be deteriorating at a rate that is uncontrollable. And obviously, once you get into that situation where you're stuck in a hospital, you know your sight is getting worse, there's no, as you say, magic eye drops that the doctors are able to conjure, then your life starts to take on a whole new shape. What was the diagnosis of your sight loss in the end?
They are still investigating it, but what they've come up with so far, thus far, is the optic atrophy. It's the optic nerve. It could be something called amblyopia, which is the nerves at the back of the eye that carry the picture from the eye up to the brain. Apparently, they are damaged, which is okay. Thank you for diagnosing it, you know. So now you know what it is. So can we fix it? And had an appointment with the eye clinic, went back for another thing. And that little tiny weeny bit of hope that I did have was sort of knocked out of the park a little bit, because now he knows what it was. I said, okay, is there a cure? Is there laser eye surgery, an operation, medication? And there was nothing. So it was quite hurting in a way, but it was, you know, sort of glad to hear it. So now, you know, we have to sort of crack on. But I said, yeah, it's a lot easier now, and you know, I'm a lot positive, and the progress I've made. But at first, the first 3 months, I was just not swimming, but I was drowning in that Egyptian river of denial.
Absolutely.
But the struggle, you know, it's just, you know, because I've always been active.
What's fantastic, Neil, is you've mentioned it a couple of times, but just how positive you do come across. You're saying there, it was almost 7 months ago now, 3 months you were drowning in almost a pit of despair, but now you're pulling yourself back up. And how has life been back home, readjusting? How are you in the kitchen these days, readjusting?
I agree. The first 3 months were really hard. I mean, I was wallowing in self-pity, like, you know, I was just, I had a lot of time on my hands, and it's just getting used to it. And everything that I wanted to do, I found that I couldn't do. Maybe in the future I can, but right now I couldn't do that. But what I've realised is every tool I've had, my bag is about to get rid of, and now my tool bag is empty. But now I'm getting along and I'm progressing, and I'm, you know, okay, I'm slowly getting more tools in my bag. So I do have a down day. I can go in my tool bag, reach in and say, okay, which tool is going to work for me? You know, I try to phone at least 2 people a day, somebody that can help me, and then I try to phone somebody that maybe I could help, you know? So that's a good one, like, you know, but just, you know, just being confident, keeping busy.
It's a great attitude to have. And yeah, as you say, absolutely, the positive things that you've put out there do seem to be coming back on you. They're helping you to reestablish your life. And there's many people out there, many listeners to RNIB Connect Radio just now, who have not got to that point that you're at yet, Neil. They still feel like they're drowning a little bit. Yeah. They're overwhelmed. What advice would you give them on how to deal with the next couple of months?
It does get easier. I mean, I have more bad days than good days, but it's just keeping busy. It's just picking up the phone and phoning anybody. You know, it's not the end of the world. It is what it is, and make the most of it, you know. This radio station is brilliant. I only found it quite recently, but some of the stories on there is amazing. The talking books, the inspiration, the motivation that has given me, but it's just keeping busy, finding coping mechanisms that work, no matter how little or how big and strenuous they are. Just find something little that keeps your mind active, and just, you know, and then your low self-esteem, your loneliness will pass eventually. I've always liked helping people. I never like asking for help, you know, but that's getting easier now. You know, that was stubborn, and there was things I needed help with, but I wouldn't ask, you know, so I'd go without. But it's okay to ask. And you start a day winning. If you start a day winning, you probably win the day.
Well, it's certainly been a good day chatting to you, Neil, and I'm so glad to have had your company today. Now, Neil is going to check in with us every now and then. He's going to be giving us some top tips for pastry, and I'm hoping as well to steal a couple of celebrity stories from him over the next couple of weeks. So, Neil, if you don't mind joining us again next week on the show, it'd be great to have your company.
Yes, please. I really would enjoy that, and hope everybody stays well and safe, and keep laughing. comedy, put some comedy on, just do anything, keep laughing, because what laughter is a good medicine. And I have lots of recipes which are very, very nice, but so simple. In the future, I'd love to come on and give you some recipes that are stunning. This is like bread, biscuits, scones, something similar, but everybody, no matter what stage or vision, no matter what stage or timeline you're on, everybody will be able to do these, and eating nice stuff makes us all feel good.
It absolutely does. We really look forward to it. Neil Rowe, fantastic pastry chef and friend of the stars, thank you so much for joining me on R&IB Connect Radio today.
Always a fantastic pleasure. Thank you very, very much.
You are listening to R&IB Connect Radio.